Jose hammers it deep right field. Back is Cordero. He's out of room. It's out of here. And the Indians have their first home run of the season. A three-run shot by Jose Ramirez here in inning number four. And the Indians have blown the lid off this baby and now lead it 7-1.
And the Indians go on and knock off the Royals by a final of 9-2 yesterday. The Royals start the season 1-2. And Danny Duffy pitched well, but then pulled after 65 pitches the first game of the season. And the Royals lost 2-0 Indians and struck out 18 times. I was like, wow, it's going to be a long season. Saturday, pulled one out of the fire, scored two early, didn't score forever, then scored in the 10th inning thanks to the new extra inning rules. And then, yes, they just got beat, and they're already going with an opener. They're on the third game of the season, Royals were already didn't have any starting pitching. Brady Singer, the rookie, looked pretty good in his debut over the weekend. So we'll get to that coming up on the Sports Tickle. Here with Mike Matheny, the manager of the Royals, and get his thoughts on the first three games of the season. But first, we want to recap K-18 and Pee Wee Baseball. Pee Wee Baseball now in the books, and K-18 is winding down.
Yes, Pee Wee State champions, the Concordia Lions, went over the Smith Center Chiefs on Friday night 17-8 to claim the championship there at the Pee Wee State Tournament in Concordia. And the consolation third place game, the Beloit Hornets, back on the winning track as they went 9-6 over Washington to finish out their season. So congratulations to all of those teams in the state tournament and their placings. And you want to see that full bracket, it is posted at ncksports.com. You can also see the bracket for K-18 State Baseball and the results so far. First round games were held on Saturday, and Smith Center really our only area team that made it to the state tournament, and they took on a very good Norton team in the first round and lost 14-2 there on Saturday. Clay Center beat Ellis 8-3, Washington over Goodland 5-3, and Waukini beat Clifton Clyde 13-9. Those were first round games. And yesterday in the semifinals, Clay Center sneaks past Washington 9-8 there in the first semifinal, and Norton, a dominant win over Waukini 12-2. So those are the semifinals are set for Wednesday, this Wednesday the 29th, and the championship game will be Clay Center against Norton. Consolation game will get things started with Washington taking on Waukini, and that will be at 5 o'clock for that consolation game on Wednesday, and then following the consolation will be the championship game between Clay Center and Norton. So those are the games that are coming up here that are left in summer baseball here in the area. Again, no real area teams that are still left there at the K-18 state tournament. We'll continue to follow it for you just in case folks are interested in who comes out as a state champion coming up on Wednesday night in Lucas.
Clay Center's team knocked us out in the first round of regionals. Now we feel better about ourselves because we might have lost the eventual state champion. No, we don't. I don't feel any better about it, but my son was telling me that one of his friends was watching regionals and said, kind of hope Clay Center wins. My son's like, why? Because I'd feel better. That'd make me feel better that we lost the team that won regionals. My son's like, do you remember our record? You know, it's kind of funny. He's like, my son's like, it don't matter to me, but it did to another one. And that's fine. You know, sometimes that does make you feel a little bit better. I've seen some KU fans try to play that off in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. Well, we got upset by such and such, like Arizona 1997, which was the best Kansas team I've ever seen. 1997, well, we lost Arizona. Yeah, but at least they won it all. That makes me feel better. It doesn't make me feel better. I mean, you know, like K-State loses, let's say, to Texas A&M. Well, Texas A&M won their bowl game. Well, I feel better. Why? I mean, no, you lost. It doesn't change anything, but it just, you know, that's how sometimes people reason and rationalize. It's fine. It's up to them how they want to do it. For me, I don't feel any better about a team beating me. I will say this. I guess if I was upset by a team that I know we were better than, I would like to see that team maybe win a couple more instead of just having the one lucky day and then getting blown out the next day, which probably would apply to, you know, remember the Osborne boys basketball team? I hate to bring up a sore subject, but, you know, they played Logan.
Yeah.
And Logan the next night was, what, would they lose by 40 or something?
It
was bad.
Good,
they were done right off the bat. So it was kind of, that was their big win, and then they didn't come around ready to play the next night, it seemed like. But or just played their best game of the year, and unfortunately for Osborne, that was against them. All right, so the Royals are off to a 1-2 start. They lost 2-0 on Friday. Then they won 3-2 in 10 innings on Saturday. More on that one in a moment. And then yesterday they lost 9-2, and, they're now 1-2 to start the year. Didn't get swept. And here's Mike Matheny, the new Royals skip, on the 1-2 start.
we competed well these first two games, right? And that's what we want to see every single night, is we're right in the middle of this fight, right down to the last. I believe that's part of the DNA of this organization, this particular group. So that's something I think we're all going to demand to see. But this was a day where we also needed to get people on the field and be able to take some of the load off the other guys who've been working so hard. Overall, you know, I think when we got ourselves into position to where we could be in that fight, like what we saw, and we've got to clean some things up. Overall, our walks are scoring at an extremely high rate. Our mistakes are scoring at an extremely high rate. We've talked about this since the very first breath of this season, of how we can't afford to give up bases.
Mike Matheny, and little things in baseball can just kill you. Trust me, I know all about that. And the Royals, some little things hurt them in that series against Cleveland. Carlos Carrasco made his emotional return to the mound as a reliever last September after having to step away from the game for 3 months about leukemia. And yesterday was his first start. It had been 423 days since he last towed the rubber, and he looked pretty good against the Royals yesterday. 6+ innings, allowed 2 runs on 5 hits, 1 walk, struck out 10. And then you heard one of the two Jose Ramirez homers as the Indians win 9-2. The Royals are back in action as they will take on the Tigers for the first of 4. And the boys in blue will try to get back to the 500 mark. 7 relievers pitch for the Royals, including Ronald Bolanos, who was the spot starter. The Royals tonight, 6-10. Mike Montgomery getting his first start of the year against Michael Fulmer. That's a matchup between the Royals and the Tigers. Here's one for you. That's the first time in 66 years since 1954. Do you realize that no team started year 3-0? Every single team in Major League Baseball has a loss. Every single team is either 1-2 or 2-1. Nobody went 3-0. First time in 66 years. And that was when there was only 16 Major League Baseball teams.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something?
It is.
That's crazy. Now let's go back and look at each of these games for the Royals. Let's go back to Friday. Mike Matheny caught a lot of heat because he pulled Danny Duffy with 65 pitches. What was it? Runners at first and 30 went to Scott Barlow. He's trying to get a ground ball and get out of the inning. And a lot of people criticized that. And I don't know. I guess rightfully so to an extent. But I will back up Mike Matheny here in a moment. And I have somebody that's a Cardinals fan sent me messages going, ah, here you go. You got Matheny. Congrats. This is what I've had to live with for 6 years when I was a Cardinal fan with Matheny as the manager. And I'm going to say that's the same type of stuff people say about Ned Yost. This is the exact same stuff that people say about Ned Yost. Oh, yeah, good luck. You just got Yosted. That's why we fired our manager, Ned Yost, when we were closing in on a playoff berth the final 2 weeks of the season in Milwaukee. Good luck with Ned Yost in Kansas City. All Ned did was become the winningest manager in Royals history and lead the Royals to not one but 2 World Series. One went Game 7, and the other he won. So I'd say all those people that talk and was critical of Ned Yost, and I was one of them, I'll raise my hand. I think everybody was. Yost did. It was kind of a funny thing. But and Ned sometimes didn't manage the bullpen very well, but once it got easy, hey, I'll give the 7th inning to Herrera and the 8th inning to Davis and the 9th inning to Holland. Well, that made it pretty easy. But Yost did some really great things, and so Mike Matheny is similar to that. I mean, Mike Matheny made the playoffs with the Cardinals as manager, so he's not a complete dunce. Neither was Ned Yost. Ned Yost outmanaged Buck Showalter in the playoffs. And Buck Showalter was the manager of the year, and everybody was talking about how it was the genius versus the dunce. Well, guess what? The dunce beat the genius. So, and was I livid when Ned Yost had Yordan Ventura in a playoff game in the wild card against the A's? And was I incensed when Ned left Ryan Madsen in to pitch to Jose Bautista in Game 6 at ALCS and I knew a home run was coming, and then it was? Yes, I think I lost my mind for a moment and yelled so hard that the blood veins and arteries and everything almost popped out of my head and my whole body, and I wasn't the only one. At the same time, Ned Yost did some really good things in Kansas City. Did I agree with everything he did? No. You never agree with a manager.
Nobody will.
Nobody will. It doesn't matter. You're darned if you do, darned if you don't. So let's go back to Friday, okay? Danny Duffy pitched pretty well. Royals couldn't even put the ball in play. It was embarrassing. 18 strikeouts. Shane Bieber, no relation to Justin Bieber. Shane Bieber struck out, 14 in 6 innings? Just ridiculous. And he's got good stuff, don't get me wrong. So the Royals were in a situation in the 5th inning where they're trying to win the ball game. And Mike Matheny explained it after the game, and I thought he had a really good explanation. Because sometimes managers are just like, hey, I tried it, it didn't work out, so be it. Mike Matheny explained it, and it made sense to me. And this is why I think we got to be careful not to jump all over people right away. My first reaction when Duffy was pulled 65 pitches was, I don't know, but it's also his first start of the year. And I also knew that it was a pretty big point in the game, and he's trying to get a ground ball. So I understood that part of it. But Matheny went one step further afterwards, and he said, listen, it's a 60-game season.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just, you know, if this was game one of 162, I think Duffy would have stayed out there. But he's trying to win. Every single game is so much more important in a sprint of a season instead of a marathon. So I remember year in and year out, we talk about Ned Yost. People like, well, why did Ned use the starter in there and get hit around? Well, because he's got to save his bullpen for the next day. It's a marathon, not a sprint. How many times did we say that? But this year, it's the opposite. It's a sprint instead of a marathon. So I understand what Mike Matheny was doing. He said, listen, I'm trying to get a ground ball. Did it work out? No. Would I do it over 100 times? Yes. He goes, and do I understand Duffy being a little frustrated being pulled? Sure. But that was the best chance for us to get out of that jam. And as he pointed out, and he is very, very, very correct when he says this, not every game is decided in the ninth inning when you bring in your closer. Many times, the biggest point, the most pivotal point of the game can be in the fifth or sixth inning. That can many times determine who wins the game. We always focus on the last out, the last rally. But there are many times where you got to bring in a guy to put out the fire in the sixth inning or the seventh inning or the fifth inning. Or you make a tactical move where you walk a guy, put him on, and try to get a double play in the third inning just to try to get out of a jam. And sometimes that can turn things around for a pitcher. Gets a ground ball, double play, and then, boom, he cruises. He relaxes. So I understand the thinking with Danny Duffy. And Danny Duffy isn't exactly a guy that's super durable either. So I got it. I understand it, and I understand even more, and I greatly appreciate Mike Matheny explaining that after the game. I really do.
Yeah.
Because that's transparent. And that, I think, is part of the reason why nobody in Major League Baseball is 3-0. Because of that philosophy. And I'm not saying it's wrong or right. In fact, I think it is right. Because every single game of the 60 is so much more important than one out of 162.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ahead and just sell out and give up a game so you can get your bullpen ready to go the next night. Yeah, we're down 5-0 in the third. You know what? It's time to just let that guy go. His ERA is going to balloon. It's going to hurt his numbers individually, but that's what's best for the team. He's a sacrificial lamb today because my bullpen was spent for my extra inning game the day before. And now this guy, you know, he doesn't have his good stuff, but we're just going to fight through it. We lose 12-1. So what? We can't let one loss turn into two or three. Well, now you really have if you have a chance to win a game or to stay in a game, you've got to go for it in a 60-game sprint.
Yeah.
And that's what Mike Matheny did on Friday. So I have no problem with that. The problem I have with Friday has nothing to do with the manager. The problem I have Friday is the Royals batters. 18 strikeouts in 27 outs that you're allowed. That's 67% of the outs were strikeouts. They didn't put the ball in play. Let's go one step further. Saturday, the Royals struck out 7 times, which really isn't that horrible. And what do you know? They won the game 3-2 in 10 innings. You know how many times they struck out yesterday? Did you pay attention how many times they struck out yesterday?
I saw the starter had 10. Was it 15?
Right. Yes, 15.
Yeah, I couldn't remember 15. After that.
15. So let me summarize for you. The Royals in 28 innings, because they went 10 innings in game two. So they played 28 innings. That's a total of 84 outs. The Royals struck out 40 of those 84 outs. Basically, 50% of their outs, they didn't even put the ball in play. That's what we need in our K18 team. If we strike out everybody, we don't have to worry about defense. We don't have to be that great defensively. We just have to strike people out. But when you don't strike people out, then you rely on your defense, then you got to really play good defense. And so the Indians, we don't know how good their defense is. The Royals can't put the ball in play. The Royals, in a 3-game series to start the season, scored a total of how many runs? 4. Thank you. 0 + 2 + 2 = 4. The Royals are lucky to win one.
Yeah.
So they scored 4 runs the entire series in 28 innings. Listen, we talked about how starting...
Well, they had 5, though, didn't they? They had 3 in the second
game. Okay, 3. Sorry, my bad.
I was like...
My bad.
I was trying to add...
2 + 3 + 2. Okay, 5. I guess
same
I,
thing though.
I guess well in regulation they had two.
Yeah,
so,
but, two to
yeah,
get
they had the extra
ten.
One.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
2-3-2. So 5 runs in 3 games. That's still not good.
Yeah.
But they've salvaged a win. So 5 runs in 3 games. Listen, you and I are in agreement that the biggest problem for the Royals is going to be, one, their starting pitching, because there's a lack of it. We already saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
And then two is maybe the bullpen, although the bullpen has been pretty solid until yesterday, which was no big deal because they were just, you know, getting blown out. The bullpen was really, really good the first 2 days, which, you know, don't we see this every year? The Royals' bullpen looks great early, first week or two. Offense struggles, and the offense comes around and the bullpen blows games. Or the starting pitching is really bad.
Yeah.
Listen, the problem with this team, I think, is still starting pitching. And I don't think the bullpen, I'm not sold on it yet after just a couple of games. But if this offense can't put the ball in play, it's going to be a long 60 games. We got to be thanking our stars it's only 60 games this year. All these people are talking about how, oh, my goodness, this helps all these young teams and all these inexperienced teams and teams that aren't as good. This is going to help them make the playoffs because their 60-game schedule, which I agree with. That's true. Their chances of making the playoffs have gone up exponentially. No doubt. But also one of the blessing disguises, if you really, really suck, this is going to be great because it's only 60 games and you can move on to next year.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying the Royals are going to do that. Although Dusty does, because he's predicted them to be 18 and 42. I said 23-37, and I stand by that, and I think Dusty probably stands by 18-42.
Yeah.
Too early to jump the guns on our predictions. But I tell you, watching the Royals play over this weekend was really hard for me. And I didn't watch all the games in every inning, but when I watched them, it was... I so miss the days of 14 and 15. Not because the Royals won the World Series or made it to the World Series in 14 and won it in 15. No, because I miss good baseball. And you know what was good baseball in 14 and 15? What was the thing they talked about all the time during the 15 run and even the 14 run too? What was it that they talked about with the Royals? There were two things. What was the first one?
I mean, the mantra was keep the line moving.
Keep the line moving.
You can't do that when you're striking.
No.
That's getting contact.
No. So the first thing, there you go. Bingo. I was hoping you'd say it. The key is making contact. What did they say, the announcers, over and over? The Royals are tough to strike out. They just battle you. They just always find a way to put the ball in play. And that puts pressure on the defense to where Daniel Murphy lets one go between his legs. And David Wright, you know, it was a slow grounder by Salvi, but David Wright goes to first and Hosmer makes a mad dash home. That mad dash home doesn't happen if Salvi strikes out, does it?
No.
Of course not. So how about Escobar putting the ball in the gap and Cespedes messes it up to start the 2015 World Series that ends up being inside the Parker. And Escobar swinging on first pitch. I mean, for crying out loud. And then what was the second thing? Speed. Well, yeah. Speed doesn't do you no good. You know, that was speed do, right? That's what Gerard Dyson would say. Speed do you nothing if you strike out. Speed do you nothing. I know it's improper grammar. Sorry, teachers. Speed do you nothing if you don't get on base. So the two great things about the Royals in 14 and 15, and I know that was 5 years ago, which, boy, it doesn't seem that long ago, but 5 years ago, 6 years ago, even 13, they did a good job getting the ball in play. The Royals put the ball in play, and then what happened was defenses made some errors or they beat it out with their speed, because you can't beat out a strikeout with your speed, can you?
No.
Unless it's a drop third strike. So what happens is you get on base, and now you cause all kinds of havoc for the opposing team and the pitcher. You get in the pitcher's head, now you steal a base, or you the threat of a steal, and the next thing you know, the guy next up in the lineup, what happens? He gets a cookie, and he hits it out over the fence or a double in the gap, and you score. Just putting the ball in play. If the Royals, how about just bunting? If they're going to strike out 18 times, did the Royals even think about trying to bunt? I mean, put the ball in play somehow, some way.
Yeah.
And the Royals struck out. Let me repeat this. They had 84 outs at their disposal, and they struck out 40 times. 40 times they struck out in 28 innings of play. Now, I know Carrasco's a good pitcher. I know that Bieber is a young, up-and-coming star. I get that. So maybe it's just a flash in the pan, but that concerns me more than anything with the starting pitching right now. You've got to put the ball in play to have any chance in this league. And you know why? Because the Royals aren't going to hit 5 homers a game. Now, if the Royals are the Bronx Bombers and they strike out 50% of the time, okay, fine. But I got Giancarlo Stanton, I got Aaron Judge, and we're going to bomb away, okay? But that's not what the Royals have.
No.
And they're missing one of their best home run hitters in Hunter Dozier. So you just, I mean, it's simple. We talk about it with our kids at the K-18 level. Just put the ball in play. Two strikes. Choke up. Don't try to smash and hit a homer 0-2. You know. Matheny said the approach at the plate was better yesterday. They still struck out 15 times. So it's really tough to watch the Royals the first three games and watch how bad the offense was. I'm going to hope, I'm going to cross my fingers, I'm going to try to be optimistic on this, is that the Indians' pitching is that good and that the Royals will figure something out here. Because if they don't, it's going to be the longest 60-game season in Royals history. Oh, yeah, it automatically will be the longest 60-game season in Royals history because that's the first time we're going to have this type of season if we get through all of it. Okay, so that's a reason to be pessimistic. A reason to be optimistic about the future of this franchise is what we saw on Saturday. Brady Singer. I mean, you talk about a guy that wasn't intimidated, wasn't overwhelmed. 5 innings, 2 runs, struck out 7. And that's the key word here. He struck out 7. He has strikeout stuff. The Royals haven't had a starter like that in quite some time. Danny Duffy, when he had that run, I don't know how many years ago it was, when he had that run where he was like a Cy Young candidate for 2 months, he was striking out, what was he, struck out, was it 18 one time? Or not 18, 16, 15, he had that one.
I think
one.
It was 16,
He almost had a no-hitter against the Rays. I think it was 16. Now, that he's the one that's probably got the best strikeout stuff. And I don't know if he does anymore. But Brady Singer has strikeout stuff. Mm-hmm. So what does that do? It does exactly what we were just talking about with the Royals and the Indian staff. The Royals hitters don't put the ball in play. Well, your defense doesn't have to worry about fielding the ball except half the time. Now your defense has it easier. And you also, when you have strike amount stuff like Brady Singer did the other day, is you can work out of jams. If a guy does make an error or you give up a double, a leadoff double, a leadoff triple, you can get out with giving up one run or maybe none. You have to have that type of stuff. And Brady Singer seems to have it, and he is a first-round draft pick of just a couple years ago. So when you look at the Royals, and you see what the Indians do, by the way, the Indians, Corey Kluber, they trade. He's on the downhill of his career. They've got other young pitchers ready to step up. Trevor Bauer, they traded, right? Trevor Bauer's a good pitcher. Mm-hmm. And they went ahead and like, listen, we're a smaller market team. Financially, we got to trade these guys or let them go. But we also keep getting really good prospects for these guys we trade. So now we got a Shane Bieber, a Mike Clevenger, you know, ready to go. That's what the Royals eventually got to get to. And that's the problem. The Royals don't have any depth in their starting rotation that's major league ready right now. But I will say this. You can tell what they're trying to do. They've got all these pitchers, college-ready pitchers a couple years ago they drafted. They've got some pitchers they really like in the minor leagues. And that's what's going to hurt with not having minor league baseball this year, stunting their growth.
Yeah.
That's why that's really going to hurt the Royals. But the future is that pitching. The future are all those young guys that they've drafted the last couple years. And Brad Keller's a part of that future. He's only 23 or 24. Junis isn't that old either. You got Brady Singer and then Kukar. Is that how you pronounce it?
Kowar. Yeah,
Kowar.
Jackson Kowar.
Yeah, Kowar. Yeah. You got Lynch down there, Bubik they like, and there's others. So the Royals maybe helps on the way. And then they got the Lacy kid they drafted who they think might be ready to go next year. He might even do something this year if they're in a pennant race.
Yeah.
So they a tall, big, powerful left-hander out of Texas A&M, which is their first-round pick this year. So they've got guys. They're just not quite ready yet. It'll be a year or two. But I tell you, 2 or 3 years from now, probably 3, this Royals team, you'd have Mondesi in his prime. Lopez, if he sticks around, I mean, I think he could be a good player. I don't know how much pop he's going to have, but you kind of like Lopez. Dozier is 28, by the way. He was a late bloomer. Soler is still young. Whit Merrifield may or may not still be on the team at that point. I would think he would be if you're contending. Gordon probably won't be. Salvi is still not that old. The Royals have some pieces. But the key is getting that rotation put together. Then once they do that, guys that aren't good enough to be the rotation can turn into lights-out closers or setup men. See Wade Davis, who was a horrible starting pitcher, but was great in relief. And that's what relievers are, failed starting pitchers. That's all they are. But they can be really good relievers if they can just say, hey, I got one pitch. I'm going to blow it by you for one inning. Whereas as a starter, you can just go on a fastball. You're going to get rocked. You got to have different pitches usually. Yeah. So reasons to be optimistic is that the future, Brady Singer, they do have some good pieces, the Royals do, but the reason to be pessimistic is that starting rotation already is very thin. That's why they're thinking about signing Matt Harvey. That means they're desperate already. And striking out a ton. Which means if you strike out a ton, you can't steal any bases and put pressure on anybody.
You can't do anything.
No, that's, you can't. Obviously.
Not on base. You literally cannot do anything.
You can't do nothing. You got to hope for a solo homer. Yeah. Okay, now the new extra inning rule, if you don't know about this, once the game goes to the 10th inning, there's automatically a runner at second. Automatically. You start the 10th inning with a runner at second. The Royals got to do that on Saturday. And what are you going to do with a runner at second? I'm going to play small ball.
Yeah.
And that's what the Royals did. And guess what happened? The Royals managed to score a run in the 10th inning on Saturday to win the game, in essence, 3-2, despite zero official at-bats.
Yeah.
Ghost runner on second. Sacrifice bunt, moved him over the third, sack fly, scored him, then a walk, then a runner was thrown out stealing. So thus, there was no official at-bats during that rally the Royals had.
Yeah.
And they won. Mike Clevenger wasn't happy after the game Indians. He said it's chicken bleep. He doesn't like the new rule.
I'm not a fan, to be completely
I'm not a big fan
you,
of it either, but I will say this. It will speed it up.
Yeah,
it will
without
speed
question.
The game up. We don't need guys wearing out their arms. And I'll say it's even more important this year with the 60-game schedule because I don't think pitchers are fully ready to go now anyway. So I think it's a good thing this year, but I don't know if I'm a fan of it on a regular basis.
No.
The DH is in place for both leagues. I think that will become a regular thing.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
I would agree with that.
So Montgomery against Fulmer, the Royals' fourth game of the season. And that's tonight in Detroit, 6:10 is first pitch there, first of four against the Tigers. Other headlines, Major League Baseball. Well, we mentioned no teams is 3-0, first time in 66 years that's happened. Justin Verlander, initial reports, because everybody wants to be the first to be first. They rushed to be first with this news. But Verlander supposedly reportedly was out for the season with a forearm strain. And they said, oh, that's a precursor to Tommy John surgery, which is really jumping the gun, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And Verlander refuted all that and said, listen, I have a forearm strain. I hope to be back to help my team pitch this season. I'm not out for the season. So suddenly all these guys started backpedaling with those breaking stories. And no, he's not out for the season. COVID-19. Are we going to get through this baseball season? You knew we couldn't get through a sports ticket show or any sports talk show in America without mentioning COVID-19. So it all started the first night of the season when Juan Soto tested positive and the Nationals and Yankees still played their game. And Mike Moustakas, former Royal, hit a big homer for the Reds first game of the season. Did you see that the other day? I think it was the first game or second game of the season. Well, now here's the deal. The Reds lost Matt Davidson. He had COVID-19. And then Mike Moustakas was ill, and they sent him home yesterday. And here's one. The Marlins starting pitcher was scratched from his start. He tested positive for COVID-19, along with three other starters, including two outfielders. So four of their starters.
There's an update on that today.
Okay.
Just now, there's eight more players and two coaches right now that say that have tested positive. The Marlins have canceled their game tonight. They're still in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they weren't flying home because of that outbreak. Yeah. So there's the first shoe to drop right there.
Yeah.
So you've got... Or
it's been postponed.
Postponed, okay.
But story said canceled, but...
Well, once again, people don't understand the difference between canceled and postponed.
I was like, you're probably not going to cancel it if you can try to get it in.
It's a 60-game season. Every game is important.
Yeah.
It's postponed. It's not canceled. So there you go. So that's eight total or eight more in addition to the four?
This was at 8:18 this morning. It said eight more players and two coaches have tested positive for the coronavirus.
14 cases. Yes, it is.
It is added.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There we go. Yep. 14 cases for Miami. 14 cases. Now what do you do? I mean,
we knew this was coming.
Oh, sure we do.
There's no bubble.
There's no bubble. No.
It's just when. It was a matter of when, not if.
No. You're right. You're absolutely right. The game for the Phillies and the Yankees tonight has been postponed. Did you see that?
I had not seen that one yet.
Why? Because the Phillies were playing the Marlins.
Yeah, exactly.
So because the Marlins almost certainly had individuals tested positive playing in games of the weekend, it's fair to wonder if the Phillies might be at risk of a similar outbreak.
Yeah.
This is what will stop your season. And Yeah, that's... I have... God, I hate to be right on this stuff. I really do. I hate that we're right on this. Because I don't want to be. I want to be wrong. I know you want to be wrong on this. But you and I have talked about this off the air. We've talked about it on the air. Unless our approach to COVID-19 changes drastically or quickly, there's going to be no major league sports this season. And if there are, it's going to be disjointed and stopping and starting and stopping and starting. And that's why the NBA thing's going to be fascinating, because it's in a bubble. And if they can't have a season, if they have an outbreak within the bubble, then how in the world is the NFL going to have a season? How in the world is college football going to have a season? And how in the world is Major League Baseball going to have a season? And is the MLS going to get through their tournament? They might, because it's a shorter thing.
And they got a bubble there, too.
Right, and they got a bubble, too. Yeah. Although, we'll see how that one goes.
We'll see how that one goes.
And where are they at in Orlando? The Marlins are, of course, they're in Philadelphia, so where they got this outbreak or whatever, they didn't fly back. If you're a player, okay, so here's the thing. You go into the season, you got all these testing protocols. Let's just focus on Major League Baseball first. So you have these protocols, and this was a big argument between the Players Association and the owners in Major League Baseball about, okay, we got to have the protocols in place and this and the testing and so forth and so on and go from there and do this and do that. And so you've done that. And then right before the season opener, Juan Soto tests positive. So Juan Soto, who is a very important part of the Nationals.
Yeah.
I mean, probably their best hitter. He's out for at least 2 weeks. Well, that's 10 games. That's almost a fifth of your season.
Yeah.
That's about 15% of your season. And that's, I'm talking 2 weeks, and that doesn't mean he's automatically ready to go when he comes back. So that's a huge blow to the Nationals. The Royals already experienced it. Hunter Dozier got it right after they did the exhibition games. Hunter Dozier, boom. All of a sudden, you're missing a guy that hits 28 homers and 84 RBIs. Yeah. 26 homers, 84 RBIs.
Brad Keller's not in your rotation.
Junis.
You know, Junis.
Both.
Yeah.
Two-fifths of your rotation is out because of COVID-19. And yet the Royals are trying to compete without two starters on already thin rotation, missing one of their best hitters from last year. And then Juan Soto, he's out, so that's one of the best players for the Nationals. That's a huge blow to them. And now you got the Marlins with 14 cases on their team, 12 players and a couple of coaches. And they just played the Phillies. That's why a lot of people were surprised that the Yankee National game went on the first night, because they're like, well, a positive test. Soto was just with his teammates 2 days before exhibition game. And the Yankees said, no, we're good. We're ready to roll. But the Yankees could easily said, listen, we're not taking a chance here. We're done. And that would have been it. Didn't matter what the Nationals wanted to do.
Yeah.
If the Yankees and Aaron Boone and the Yankees organization said, we're not playing, they wouldn't have played. So this is where we go now. That was one case, and we haven't found out if any more Nationals have been tested positive. I assume not, because usually the test turnaround is pretty quickly in Major League Baseball, contrary to society, who has to wait 2 weeks for their test results in some cases. So the Phillies obviously got to be concerned. The Marlins, anybody that's on the Marlins team or associated with the team got to be concerned if they're around the players at all. And now you already have the Marlins in what is already a sprint of a season having to postpone a game for tonight, and you know the next few games will be postponed as well. When in the world are you going to make these up? And now the Yankees game for the night against Phillies is postponed. And do you really think the Yankees and Phillies are going to play any games until everybody's been tested and cleared? No.
Get that locker room that the Marlins were in all clean, fumigated, whatever you got to do.
Yeah. Disinfected, everything. That's just a couple of teams we're talking about. Now you've got a total of, what we got? How many baseball teams we got? 30, 32 Major League Baseball
30.
Teams? 30. You got 30 teams, 30 cities, and there's traveling. And even though you keep it geographically, oh, the Central plays the Central, the East plays the East, and the West Coast plays on the West Coast, I've never bought into that at all, because you're traveling. You're not in a bubble, as you said. So you're going to travel.
Going from Seattle to Houston, I don't care.
That's not the same geography to me. No, but that's the division, the Mariners and the Rangers.
There's no way you can do it the way you want to do it.
Texas, California, and Florida have the biggest and most amount of cases right now in our country. And that's a big percentage of sports franchises are in those states, along with the ad in New York, with New York, knock on wood, doing okay now after being the epicenter for the coronavirus. Somebody please tell me how you can be optimistic when we already have problems in baseball and we're only three or four games into it.
Yeah.
how in the world are we going to continue with baseball and get the season in? And how in the world are we going to have college football? And how in the world are we going to have pro football? Please tell me. Now, maybe we'll get the NBA done with the bubble, which I'm not convinced that's going to happen either. You got guys leaving the bubble. Lou Williams left the bubble for the Clippers and went to a nightclub. Did you know that?
Yeah.
He left the bubble, was excused, and then picked up some food in Atlanta, and that's why they say he's going to be he's going to be under quarantine. No, he went to a strip club. The guy apparently has a strip club fetish or whatever it may be, and he apparently decided it was more important than being in a bubble. He's going berserk, apparently, and he got out of the bubble, came up with a great excuse, somehow apparently thought that he wouldn't get in trouble. He did, which he's an important part of the Clippers, wouldn't you say, to win a title.
Yeah.
And he put himself above everybody else. And here's the other thing. If he did it, how many other guys are doing this? This is the thing I don't understand. Like, I saw all these certain players getting the excuses to leave the bubble, and, they got a family matter to attend to. Zion Williamson. How do we know that wasn't made up? Now, Zion Williamson, hopefully it's legit. I hope it's legit. But to me, unless it's a family emergency, there is no way anybody should leave the bubble if the NBA wants to have a season. Lou Williams should have not. I don't know what excuse he came up with. Maybe it was a family emergency. He lied about it. Maybe he didn't. He saw the family member and then decided, hey, while I'm out here, I'm going to go get food, pick it up in Atlanta at a restaurant, and I'm going to go to a strip club. I don't know what he was thinking, but that's all it takes. We talk about society in general. It takes one person to think, it ain't going to happen to me, and then they do all these dumb things. And yes, it is dumb. It's irresponsible for everybody else, and then they can ruin it for everybody else, and Lou Williams could very well ruin things for other people in the NBA. If Lou Williams tests positive for COVID-19 at some point, or others that leave the bubble come back in and they test positive, what do you think just what happened? You just allowed the bubble to be deflated because you let people leave the bubble.
Yeah.
To me, I don't get that part. It's a bubble, but we make exceptions to let people leave the bubble. To me, it's very simple. If you leave the bubble, even for a family emergency, and I know this just seems really harsh. I'm not trying to be mean, ladies and gentlemen, but to me, this is the only thing that makes sense. The reason you have a bubble is why, Dusty? Why do you have a bubble? Why is there a bubble in effect in Orlando? Why are the soccer players and the baseball, or not baseball players, NBA, why are they in a bubble to start with?
To keep infection in and out.
Well, to keep it in.
To keep infection from coming in.
Yes.
And then
keep it out.
Yeah, keep it out.
Right. So if you allow one person, Lou Williams, Zion Williamson, I don't care who it is, superstar, not a superstar, and you allow that person to leave the bubble, that person shouldn't be allowed back in. That's the safest way to do it. You say, listen, we understand you have a family emergency. We totally get it, but we can't chance anything here. So you go ahead and you see your family member, and we're so sorry that that happened, and you need to do what's best for you, but we really can't take a chance of you coming back into the bubble. That would be the safer way of doing it. So now, I don't know from a legal perspective or a union perspective how that all works, but that would make the most common sense to me. The point of a bubble is you stay in the bubble. If you let people out of the bubble, it totally, totally defeats the whole purpose of having a bubble.
Yeah. It's like if I have
a rule in baseball where, hey, kids, you can't go to the pool on game day. And then five kids go to the pool on game day and I don't punish them. What's the point of having a rule about not going to the pool if you're not going to enforce it?
Yeah, it started at the top with this thing for me in the NBA because Adam Silver literally said, I'm not going to be there the whole time while we coming in and out. What?
And Adam Silver is one of the better leaders of the pro sport.
And that was the reason from the start that I was sitting out, and I'm still questionable about it because how do you get everybody to stay in that bubble? Everybody. And I'm not just talking players.
Oh, no.
Talking who has to run those event centers and things
like
that.
Well, and you got hotel people. You've got people making
the
food.
Everywhere.
Yes. We've talked about the problems with the bubble itself.
You sit there and tell me these guys are around their homes and they can't go to their homes? Something's not going to work there. They're going to get more antsy, I would think, than the people, the NBA players that are in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Because they literally are a couple miles from their home, maybe, and they can't go.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, I got to get out of here. I got to go home. It's right there. I got to go. And so that whole thing just from the start was, and then when Adam Silver said that, I'm like, oh, goodness. They had the deal the other day about a week ago that said out of the 346 players that were tested, there were zero positive tests. My mind said, those are the players that are playing in the NBA this year. Nobody in, nobody out. Let's do it. If you really want to do it,
that's the way it should be.
You got to do it.
Yes.
And I know that there's guys that aren't there yet that are important to their teams. But
well, Westbrook had it before he reported, so he's now going to the bubble.
Yeah,
actually,
he's not
in the
yet.
Bubble. I think it's going to be Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, he might have, yeah.
But he's
but
now
that was
gotten
for me,
his quarantine.
It's like, those are your 346. Everybody's positive, nobody in, nobody out. If you really want a bubble and
you
really don't
have
want
it.
Anything
then
to
you
happen.
Shouldn't have it then.
Yeah.
That's
but
right.
That's not, you know that's not going to be the case. I mean, you're not going to say, right. No, Russell Westbrook, he can't come in.
Or Zion Williams, he can't come
Zion,
back.
Zion, he can't come back.
Yeah, or Lou Williams, he can't come back. Very irresponsible of Lou Williams, but I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to put it all on Lou Williams because
no,
I guarantee other players are going to do or want to do that. And the longer you go, the more. Think about this. They're going to be in that bubble for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
They're already. I mean, players are already complaining about the food at the hotel, which, you know, those players are tone deaf to what's happening in the world. Spoiled rotten.
Absolutely.
You wonder why people always side with the owners instead of the players. Not always, but most of the time. Because players act like spoiled brats. And some of these players in the NBA, like Steven Adams, I love Steven Adams, and he made a very good point. He goes, listen, it's not that big a deal to be in a bubble. He goes, there are people dying in battle in Syria.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, dude, this is not a big deal. But that was his way to refute all these other people whining about the food that they're getting at a hotel in a bubble. It's like, dude, you've got the nicer hotels to live in. Yes, it's not home. I get it. I'd be going a little stir crazy, too. I mean, they're all human. I get that part. But to publicly complain about it the first week in the bubble, maybe wait till a month in the bubble. At least.
Yeah.
That means you're so tone deaf. You have no idea what's happening in the world. You don't live in reality. And so you get a test. Well,
and that's the case before the bubble, like
yes,
you said.
Yeah, right.
That's nothing to do
no,
with the bubble.
Right. And then they get a test result back in 24 hours, and then there's people in this world working, you know, $10 an hour, $8 an hour jobs, hoping just to go back to work to make chump change, and they can't get a result for a week.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a shortage in testing now. We're starting to hear about that. I'm like, how can we rationalize all these athletes and all these tests being taken up and labs being taken up to get all these tests for athletes when there are people in this country now, we're starting to get less and less testing supplies and labs are overwhelmed and can't get results. In some cases, we're talking a week, 2 weeks or longer. How in the world can we keep rationalizing this to where athletes get all these tests over and over and over? And there's going to be a ton more tests with Miami, obviously, and the Marlins, the Phillies, the Yankees. That's just to touch upon that. Now, one more step further. The Boston Red Sox have shut down left-handed pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez's throwing program after discovering health complications stemming from his bout with COVID-19. He has heart inflammation of a heart muscle. And he's only 27.
Yeah.
He's told reporters he's still scared about the condition after learning about it in recent days. 27-year-old guy that's in pretty good athletic shape. Major League Baseball pitcher who is a millionaire. And he had COVID-19, and now one of the after effects is heart inflammation, which means he obviously had a stronger case than others. Now, think about this for a second. Not trying to play Debbie Downer. God, I hate saying that too, but I have to say it. If you're listening to the program right now, put yourself in the shoes of a Major League Baseball player. Let's come up with an example. Who would be a really good example? Danny Duffy. Let's just go with that one. Danny Duffy. You're Danny Duffy. You're a left-handed pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. You're Danny Duffy. And you're older than Eduardo Rodriguez, who's 27. And you are a Major League Baseball player that has money in the bank. You're on a pretty good contract now. And there's COVID-19 popping up in Major League Baseball, and we've only played 3 games so far this season. You've got games being canceled or postponed because of COVID-19 already. And you've got a guy that is a pitcher who is only 27, who has a pretty big post-complication of COVID-19, and that's inflammation of a heart muscle, which is serious stuff.
Yeah.
If you're Danny Duffy, are you really chomping at the bit to go play ball?
Probably not.
And if you are, you're still worried, aren't you, about what might happen when we go to Detroit? Because now here's what, think about this, what the Royals have done. I'm just going to use the Royals as an example. The Royals were in Kansas City Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They went to St. Louis Wednesday. Or no, wait a minute. They were
Monday, Tuesday.
Then they traveled to St. Louis. Okay.
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, they played Houston in Kansas City. So the Royals, think about this for a second. In a span of 6 days, are you with me?
Yeah.
In a span of 6 days, the Royals have been in Kansas City, St. Louis, Cleveland, and Detroit. because they got in Detroit yesterday after the game, that afternoon game with the Indians. They're in Detroit last night. And you wonder how this season's going to get, how we're going to have a season? Baseball's even worse than football in regards to the NFL, college football. Because, especially NFL, let's compare NFL to Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, they have a three-game series. All right, they stay in the same city. Yeah, true, but they go to on a road trip. Well, it doesn't matter, road or home. You're going to be in two different cities in 1 week for sure, sometimes three. In this case, the Royals are in four cities in 6 days. That's just the Royals. Yeah. I didn't even talk about the other 29 teams. Now, the NFL, let's use the Chiefs as an example, since we had the Royals for baseball. How about the Chiefs for football? The Chiefs open up the season on a Thursday night. They're going to be all training camp there in Kansas City. They're still going home. They're not in a bubble.
Yeah.
Okay? And then the Texans come to town from Houston, which is a hot spot right now. Maybe different come early September. Houston comes to town on a Wednesday, probably. And they're going to play a game on Thursday night. That's the season opener, NFL. Texans at the Chiefs, with more than likely no fans. And then Houston will go back to Houston, and the Chiefs will stay in Kansas City. Okay, that one's not as complicated because the Chiefs are staying in Kansas City the whole time, and Houston is making one trip to Kansas City and then the back. Thus, the NFL has a better chance of maybe making this work. Major League Baseball, to me, doesn't because of what I just established. The Royals have been the four cities in 6 days. Now, once you get into the season, there's going to probably be two or three. Probably three at max.
The schedule's right there. They try to do a lot of home games in a row, so you don't have to travel. That's kind of the way the schedule's set up. There's a week where the Royals won't go anywhere, I know.
So here we go. So coming up Sunday, let's start a new week, right? Sunday. Uh-huh. The Royals will be at home in Kansas City. They'll be in Kansas City, then they go to Chicago, then back to Kansas City. So that's two cities in seven days. The only time you're not going to have that, actually, there is no week.
I thought the first week of the season was the only time they had back-to-back road.
There is not a single week in this abbreviated season where the Royals will be in Kansas City for a whole 7 days. They've got a six-game homestand. Let's see. I'm talking weeks. I'm Sunday to Saturday.
Yeah.
So August 30th, they'll be in Chicago. Then they're at home against Cleveland for three, White Sox home for four. Now, it's a seven-day period where they're in Kansas City. But over the course of a regular Sunday through Saturday week, the Royals don't have a single situation where they... So if you go Sunday through Saturday, every single week of the season, the Royals are in at least two cities, their own and one other.
Yeah.
And this past week, 4 and 6 days, at the very beginning of this season, where COVID is already... Obviously, we're having more outbreaks.
Yeah, and that won't happen again all season to be in three cities, will it?
No.
Will it?
Yes, three.
It will. With three. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, coming up August 9th, they'll be home Kansas City.
Oh, because they got like a 2-2,
then at Cincinnati, and then at Minnesota. They have two off days, and they're still in three cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how about this one? August 23rd. August 23rd, Royals are Kansas City on a Sunday, at St. Louis, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, at Chicago, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's three cities.
Yeah.
September 13th, Kansas City on a Sunday, at Detroit on a Tuesday, Wednesday, at Milwaukee, Friday, Saturday. That's three cities in 7 days. So basically half of the season, they had three cities in 7 days.
Probably that way for every team where it falls,
More than likely.
Yeah.
You tell me how we're going to get the season. How in the world are we going to get through a Major League Baseball season? I'm going to tell you how you get through it. This is the only possible way you're going to get through the Major League Baseball season. Only possible way. You just got to run right through it. Okay, half the team's got COVID. Call up the minor guys. You can't call up the minor guys because there's no minor leagues.
Yeah.
Okay, and you got to worry about service time and everything else. So if half your team gets it, like the Marlins, they don't have enough players to play. But that would be about the only way to get through this thing. Don't you? I mean, you just got to put your head down and go, listen, we got 10 guys positive. All right, we might have to postpone a game or two, and then we'll try to reschedule it, but we're going to keep forcing our way through this thing. Dude, we're only in the four. The Marlins have gone to one city so far. That's it.
Yeah.
And they've got 14 cases.
No, and they came from a place that is not good to be in right now.
No.
And so they probably got it before they left.
Went to Philly. You know, they spread it to Philly.
Yeah.
Now the Phillies may have it.
So your thing there is like they had the 60-player taxi squad to fix some of these issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but how many do we know? How many need to be quarantined right now for the Marlins? Like, there's 14
at least 14
positive tests.
Yeah, but close contacts.
But exactly,
the rest
that's what
the whole
I'm
team.
Saying.
The
like,
whole team, probably.
Yeah, I'm like, how is the whole team not close to all these other guys?
So then you bring up the whole taxi squad?
Yeah, so that you're going to have a replacement team if
Which,
you do it like
and
that.
And some of those guys are probably around these guys, too.
And that's what I'm saying is, like...
Because they're not down at AAA.
The only way you can do this, bring guys from the taxi squad, is if you bring 25, 26 of them.
Right.
You can't...
Right.
You can't fill the 14... Yeah. Or it's not 14 players. I think it's 10 or 12, but
12,
whatever it is. You can't fill all that with these taxi squad guys because then they're going to come in contact with other guys that maybe have not tested positive yet but will.
Right.
It's a mess. And you think you've got that figured out by having a 60-team or 60-player taxi squad, but that's not how it works. It's not going to be. And by the way, your regular roster is part of that 60 players.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even – it's like half the team.
Right.
It's part of that 60-player squad already. From what I understand,
the whole close contact thing is the thing that really kills you on that.
Yeah.
And that's why college football is going to have a hard time having their season.
Yes.
So will the season be canceled? That's up to the commissioner, Rob Manfred. But here's the point I wanted to make, and I think I was starting to make it earlier, I used the Danny Duffy as example. If you're Danny Duffy, if you start to have a couple outbreaks in Major League Baseball, what you're going to see is more players saying, you know what, screw this,
yeah,
I'm out.
Playing, yeah.
I'm out. I'm opting out. You're going to see it. You're going to see it. And then if you lose star players opting out, then your season falls apart. I was not very hopeful Major League Baseball was going to get the whole season in, and I am a lot less hopeful now.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, you're going to, like I just said, you've got these teams traveling to two or three cities in a week. Even if you stay in the Midwest, it doesn't matter.
No.
Think all the people you come in contact with.
Yeah.
Hotels, you eat... Even if you stay in the room, and you know these guys aren't going to stay in the room. I mean, that's the biggest, funniest thing. You're going to stay in the room and have a curfew. These are grown men. They want their fun. A lot of guys are single. They're going to go out to the Lou Williams strip clubs of America. They will. If they're open, they will. And they're not going to be wearing a mask. I can assure you of that.
Mask gets in the way.
Right.
Of life, right.
By the way, I should not go here, but the strip clubs... Did the strippers wear masks while they're doing their stuff? Or anyway.
How those kind of businesses
Dusty,
are
you
open
look,
right now. But
I don't know how they're open either. But, Dusty, you look into that and get back to me.
I can't do that on work time, man.
Hey, that's right. Wait, 5:01, buddy. Lunch hour, Noah.
I'll wait until I get
Dusty.
Home.
Lunch hour, Dusty. You get on that. My oldest son was older. He'd be happy to probably look that information up. He's not working. Okay, let's shift to football here. The Chiefs are down a starter. As Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the French-Canadian, who has been a solid lineman for the Chiefs, although I've said he's going to be a cap casualty next year anyway.
Uh-huh.
He was scheduled to make $2.75 million. He's starting right guard for the Chiefs, and I'm not convinced he would have been the starter this year for sure. He went on Twitter. The NFL came to an agreement with the PA, the Player Association, about opt-outs, this and that, so forth and so on. And Tardif was the first one to opt out of his contract ahead of the upcoming NFL season. Here's what he said, and I quote on Twitter, "Given the worldwide sanitary crisis we are currently experiencing, the NFL and the NFLPA have agreed to significant health and safety protocols to protect the players. There is no doubt in my mind the Chiefs medical staff have put together a strong plan to minimize the health risk associated with COVID-19, but some risk will remain. This is one of the most difficult decisions I've had to make in my life, but I must follow my convictions and do what I believe is right for me personally. That is why I've decided to take the opt-out option negotiated by the league and the NFLPA and officially opt out of the 2020 NFL season. Being at the front line during the offseason has given me a different perspective on this pandemic and the stress it puts on individuals in our healthcare system. I cannot allow myself to potentially transmit the virus in our communities simply to play the sport that I love. If I am to take risk, I will do it caring for patients. I want to thank everyone in the Kansas City Chiefs organization for their support and understanding." Tardif had 3 years remaining on his contract. He was scheduled to earn $2.75 million base salary for the defending Super Bowl champions. He was a sixth-round draft pick of the 2014 NFL draft. In April, the medical school graduate began working at a long-term care facility in Quebec to help during the pandemic. Here's what happens. One provision allowed players to opt out of the upcoming season. High-risk individuals could opt out and receive a $350,000 stipend, whereas those less at risk, which Tardif would be less at risk, would receive a $150,000 stipend. So to put this in perspective, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif just gave up $2.6 million to fight COVID-19 on the front lines in Canada and gave up $2.6 million to play football for the reigning Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Now, he doesn't go away empty-handed. He does get $150,000. Listen, if you want to call Tardif a hero, by all means, call him a hero. If you don't feel he's a hero and you feel like it's just a guy that's still getting money, but not, he's walking away for a lot of money, but that doesn't mean he's a hero. It just means that he's got some conviction. You have the right to that opinion as well. I do think sometimes we throw the word hero out there too often. We definitely throw the word courageous out there way too often. And I saw some people arguing back and forth about whether or not Tardif is a hero or not. Here's the thing. If he's working on the front lines against COVID-19, I think he's a hero. I think anybody we have working on the front lines that's wearing mask and protective gear all day long, dealing with COVID-19, I think our healthcare professionals in this world, they're on the front lines like Tardif. Just because the NFL player walked away from $2.6 million, he should have already been considered a hero before he opted out of his contract. But if you want to sit here and you want to argue that heroes should be reserved for guys that have their arms blown off in war, okay, I understand what you're saying. Or heroes are ones that have actually served our country. Or a hero is, you know, running into a burning building and saving somebody. Or, you know, going into a, like Joe Delaney. How about Joe Delaney? Former NFL running back for the Chiefs, who was 27, the prime of his life, and he went and dove in, even though he knew he couldn't swim, to save two boys. Saved the boys, but he drowned, and his life ended. That's a hero, no doubt. But why can't somebody on the front lines that's risking their life and their livelihood for their families, and maybe even putting their families at risk, trying to battle COVID-19, why can't they be called heroes? They can, and it's up to you to decide who's a hero and who's not. So when people sit here and start yelling at people for calling somebody a hero, shut the hell up. I'm sorry, I'm going to be blunt, and I'm sorry for my language, but it is just, there's so many stronger words I want to say. It is so asinine that people in this world can't just shut up and let somebody call somebody a hero and have to argue it. I'm not kidding you. There are people that are arguing and yelling at each other because people are calling DeVarne Tardif, an offensive line NFL, a hero, because he's on the front lines battling COVID-19. If he wasn't an NFL player, he'd probably be cool. Nobody'd argue he's a hero. But because he walked away from a contract, people say he's a hero. Some people may take that as exception because there's all these frontline workers that aren't NFL players, not walking away from a lot of money, that are heroes too. There's two sides of this. And then there are people going, well, he's only considered a hero because he's an NFL player that walked away from $2.6 million. He's still got $150K, and I can't make $150K in 10 years. I get both perspectives, but here's the thing. So what if somebody calls him a hero?
Yeah.
Why do you care? Why can't we just let the guy be a hero? If you think he's a hero, Dusty, then by golly, you call him a hero. If I don't think he's a hero, I don't have to shove that in your face. All I got to say is, you know what? I don't consider him a hero, but that's my opinion. You think he's a hero? I'm not going to yell at Dusty for saying he's a hero. I mean, come on, people. There are different forms of heroes that come into this world and go out of this world. And it's just, oh, my goodness gracious. When people are arguing and yelling and talking about, there's different types of heroes. There can be different types of heroes. You know who can be a hero? Somebody that battles cancer for years. That can be a hero. Okay? It's just, oh, goodness gracious.
There's a lot there because we live in a world where you can't make a comment
without
somebody judging it.
Yes.
And so in whatever way, you know, some of that's like you can't, and, you know, somebody will make a comment back thinking they're being positive about it. But when you read it, it's like,
it's not,
and they're still not really, you know, saying the right thing about that. You're asking the wrong person if you want to tell me that healthcare workers aren't heroes, because
you've experienced
it. I've been there. Mm-hmm. And if you spent 2 months in a hospital and you can't move very well, and you feel like 8, 9, 10 of these people might have saved your life,
mm-hmm.
That's a hero to me.
Absolutely.
What's he doing right now? He's just saving people's lives. Whether you want to agree with that or not, whether you want to sit here and think that, oh, this isn't as important as this. Listen, I don't give... I'll stop myself too, but I don't care what a guy does with part of his profession. Okay, football's a side note for LDT. We've known that forever.
Oh, absolutely.
The guy wants to have MD put on his jersey, and the NFL won't let him.
I think he should.
Exactly. Football has always been a side thing.
Right.
Listen, he's good enough at it. He's good enough to make millions of dollars playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something, like he said, it's the game that he loves. But his job is a doctor. His mm-hmm. profession is to be a doctor. Right. Football is – how many people – maybe you should look up to a guy like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of somebody that went through school. And I'm not saying it's wrong.
Mm.
People go to college to get a job, as Bob Huggins used to always say.
Right.
Like my guys come to college to get a job. A lot of them don't come to just graduate. They come to get a job, mm-hmm. get set up for the future. They get jobs in the NBA. They get jobs in the NFL. But how many guys do you know and do you see that after the NFL, after the NBA, after Major League Baseball is over, they don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a guy that had it all set up for him.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what he wanted to do, what he wanted to be, and he's doing that right now.
And he studied in the offseason, worked his butt off during the season even to become an MD.
Yeah, and it's like a hero, person who is admired or idealized for courage, outstanding achievements, or noble qualities.
That's a hero to me.
That's Laurent Duvernay-Tardif to a T.
Yes.
Whether you want to say it or not, because he's making $150,000 this year and $2.75 million if he comes back next year, because
mm-hmm.
it rolls over, and if the Chiefs keep him on,
right.
that's what he'll make next year, he would have made this year. But I don't care what he makes on his side gig, right? How many of you guys have side gigs? Can I not call you a hero because you have two jobs?
Yeah.
Because you're working a side thing that helps you pay for some of the luxuries you want in life?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. That definition is what I directly read as a definition of a hero. And if you don't understand that, then you don't know what a hero is, and you're just speaking out of the
right
somewhere else.
Exactly.
And I just, like I said, I'll go to bat for healthcare workers every day of the week and twice on Sunday, because I know what it is and I know what it means. And I've not been in there before as an actual employee, as a health worker.
Right.
But I've seen it with my own two eyes so much.
Well put. All right, so the Chiefs have found a replacement already. Kaliche Asamele, I can't pronounce it correctly. but anyway, I remember him playing for the Raiders. He was all pro guard with the Raiders. He played for the Ravens. He was with the Jets, and then he had a fallout in regards to a shoulder injury he had, and they couldn't agree on the shoulder injury, and they had a settlement, and so he was let go. He's 31 years of age, but 6'5", 330 pounds, and I think he'll fit in fine with the Chiefs, but it's not a guarantee that he's going to get it. Him and Martavis Rankin might be the front runners, and Rankin would replace Andrew Wiley, who, remember, was a starting offensive guard on the left side last year, but then Wisniewski came in when Wiley was hurt, and Wisniewski ended up being the starter the rest of the year. And then, of course, Wisniewski left to sign as a free agent with the Steelers, which I don't think is a big loss. So you look at the Chiefs. Are they in trouble because Tardif is not going to play this year? I'd say no. I do think he's a hero. I agree with Dusty. I think he's a very good offensive lineman, but he is replaceable in regards to football. And so Rankin and Asamele, they are probably your front runners at guards. But then you also, the Chiefs, remember, they drafted Lucas Niang from TCU, 6'7", 325-pound. He can be a tackle or a guard. Now, I don't think he's going to play a lot this year, but that is depth that they have at that position. They also picked up Mike Remmers, who's 31. He's an experienced utility man on the offensive line. He can play guard. He can play center. He might even be able to play tackle a little bit. So the Chiefs have options on the offensive line. And then you got Allegretti, who they drafted a few years ago, who might be able to challenge Ryder at the center position. So you're going to have some real good competition between these guys on who's going to be starters on the offensive line. I think that's terrific, because that offensive line can be better if they can push each other to be better, and it makes them better. Then guess what? That's a better offensive line to protect your $503 million investment called Patrick Mahomes. So I've said all along that Tardif is a guy that's going to be a cap casualty anyway. He's probably making a little bit too much money with his contract, although they move it around, front load it, back load it, all this. But he was a guy that's probably going to be a cap casualty down the line because of Mahomes' contract and then the Chris Jones contract and everything else. You got to cut somewhere. There's a one-year, $2 million deal with the Asamoah, and that actually saves the Chiefs $600,000.
Yeah.
As of now, it was. It will with Tardif stepping away. So I think the Chiefs will be just fine at offensive line. So if you're a Chiefs fan freaking out because Tardif stepped away from the game, don't freak out. Wish Tardif the best of luck. And please, I encourage you to consider him a hero. KU's new football opener will be August 29th, so that'll be a week earlier than what was originally scheduled, which that might not be a good thing. Southern Illinois is their opponent. FCS team Southern Illinois comes to Lawrence on August 29th. We shall see if that comes to fruition or not.
Let's move it up a week. That doesn't seem like...
Apparently, Southern Illinois plays September 5th. I assume that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, they got to do it like that to fit it in.
They got a date. Now we'll see if they'll play it. Once again, the big news in sports, as Dusty broke here on the sports ticket, 14 cases of COVID-19 with the Miami Marlins. A couple of coaches. The rest are players. There were four that tested positive yesterday, and now there are even more. And the games for the Marlins tonight, who are they going to play? Baltimore? The Marlins, by the way, never did leave Philly, so they never went back to Miami. Baltimore actually had flown to Miami, believe it or not. So Baltimore's already there. So Baltimore, Miami not playing tonight, postponed, and more than likely that whole series will be postponed. And the Phillies and the Yankees supposed to play tonight, and with the Phillies being maybe exposed, having played the Marlins the last few days, that game tonight, and I would guess more, will be postponed as well. So that is the breaking news when it comes to sports. COVID-19, once again, messing up sports in everyday life.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.